This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my home studio just north of New York City. And Taylor, yesterday I sent you, if you remember, some great sound from birds right around my house.
Oh, yeah. So refreshing. We should just play this every morning all the way until the games get started. Maybe we'll get some new sound.
I kind of like that. But, you know, during the course of the day, I mentioned that I felt like I heard birds yesterday that I don't typically hear until spring. But I heard from Mac on Twitter yesterday that one was that's a black-capped chickadee that he says is out and about year-round.
False alarm.
You know, it's all in the spirit of things, you know?
For sure. Yeah. Thanks
a lot
for
that, Mac. But I appreciate the feedback on that. We asked for it yesterday and we certainly got it. News and notes before, as we get started on this busy podcast, Kevin Mather, the Mariners president and CEO, resigned after recent remarks. We went through that in the podcast on Monday. Tim and I talked about how we didn't know he could survive. Well, he didn't. He resigned. John Stanton, who is the Mariners chairman and managing partner, said he was extremely disappointed when he learned of Mather's comments. And Stanton also acknowledged he talked a couple times with baseball commissioner Rob Manfred yesterday. And I'm guessing that Manfred probably is telling him he's got to go. Fernando Tatis Jr. met with reporters for the first time since signing that huge 14-year, $340 million contract.
I just feel grateful for everything that has happened. First of all, I want to thank Peter for putting their part. Thank AJ for trusting me. To my family, you know, they built me up. What I always say, what I am today is because of my family. How they just brought me out to this life, how they teach me everything, and you know, they'll always be my number one supporters, and they always have been there for me. I want to say thank you to everybody out there that has helped me in my career. Every coach that have put their part on my side. They know who they are, and I just want to say thank you.
Francisco Lindor was in Mets camp. He spoke with reporters with Mets blue hair, and he talked about getting to know his teammates.
It's been great so far. This past couple of days, they've been good. Everybody seems nice. Everybody that I talked to has been really nice and joyful to talk to. Today was the first day we took the field as a team, and it was fun. It was fun to be around the guys to see what everybody's got, and the work ethic I've been seeing from the guys have been really, really good. You know, the only thing that makes you want to do is elevate your game and get better.
We're going to start today our division-by-division preview, team-by-team preview. We're going to be talking with Steve Gelbs of SNY, and he's going to be talking about the impact of Francisco Lindor on the Mets pitching staff. Houston shortstop Carlos Correa, who, like Lindor, is eligible for free agency after this year, told reporters that he's open to an extension with the Astros. Nolan Arenado is in Cardinals camp, and he shared some thoughts.
First day is always a little different. You know, it's always kind of, you know, we have physicals. It's kind of a long day, but, you know, we got on the field smoothly. And, yeah, it was fun being in the group with those guys, talking the game. But it was a good, solid day. You know, it felt good to be out there with the team, putting pants on again. So a real easy day. I thought it was really important to get here early. You know, the big thing was obviously to get used to where I was going. And then the other was the time difference from California. It's a 3-hour difference. So getting up early over here is pretty early back home. So had to get used to it a little bit quicker, and I thought it'd prepare me for this day, and it has. So getting up early hasn't been a problem.
A lot of the unsigned free agents are finding homes. Tyler Clippard joining the Arizona Diamondbacks. Jeremy Jeffress signing a minor league contract with the Washington Nationals. Interesting situation with Albert Pujols. His wife posted on social media last night that Albert is retiring after this season, but then Aldin Gonzalez and Enrique Rojas, our two colleagues here at ESPN, refuted that, got word from Pujols that he's not necessarily ending his career. So I'm sure at some point we're going to be hearing from Albert about what his plans are going to be. And a really cool story about Freddie Freeman that we published last night about how his family surprisingly grew from 1 to 3. And we'll talk about that in a moment with Jessica Mendoza. Before we get to Jess and to Sarah Langs and to Steve Gelbs, two things I want to mention. First, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcast and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus. And check out the brand new podcast, First Take, Her Take. On the latest episode, hosts Charlie, Kimberly, and Shanae discuss the running theme of apologies. The ladies dive into everything from the Bachelor, Bachelorette drama to Urban Meyer catching criticism for his most recent hiring process. Listen to First Take, Her Take, wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Jessica Mendoza is an analyst for ESPN. And Jess, look, I think I texted you a couple days ago or yesterday morning about coming on. And then this great story broke about Freddie and Chelsea Freeman last night. I was like, I'm so glad I'm talking to Jess today because this is a fun story.
Absolutely. And honestly, as a parent that has two boys of my own and has struggled to have kids, like I appreciate so much to hear parents put out there like their own, like, you know, every human has different, you know, experiences. And I love that the Freemans were so open with how they struggled, but also the miracle of what ended up happening.
So after having their first child, just to give some backstory on this, Freddie and Chelsea started having some trouble with fertility issues and having a second baby. And they eventually decided to go with a surrogate. And almost simultaneous to that decision, Chelsea became pregnant. And they went ahead with a surrogate, and their son Brandon was born on December 30th, and Maximus Turner, who's named for the ballpark that Freddie used to play in, was born on Valentine's Day. I talked to Freddie and Chelsea last night on the phone and asked why they waited till now to talk about this.
You know, obviously, every pregnancy and fertility journey is a little bit different for everyone, and Aunt Carol, one of them's awake. Sorry, one. We got one crying. But we just wanted to wait for them to be here and healthy and, you know, respect our surrogate's privacy as well. So I think it's just kind of an inspiration story that we've talked to a lot of people, and they think it's an incredible story that we have. And, you know, as you know, we tried for a couple of years and it didn't happen. And we were talking to doctors and they suggested surrogacy, and, you know, we kind of jumped at it because we wanted to be blessed with more kids. And so we went that route, and Chelsea, you know, did the whole IVF, the egg removal and all that. And that was the hardest thing for me, was I wasn't even here with her when that happened. I was actually in spring training last year. So I was practicing, and I had my phone in my back pocket as I, you know, just trying to get updates. So that was the hardest thing for me. But, you know, she's a superwoman, so we did all that. And you know, that's all we were expecting, really. And then come, you know, we had quarantine, we had COVID, we got shut down. And about first week of May, I came home from a workout. You guys saw that video that we
yep.
that you've seen where I came home from workout and I was told that Chelsea was pregnant, which was even more crazy because we weren't expecting that. And that was 9 days before our embryo transfer.
Wow.
To our surrogate. So when we got that, we talked and they were like, well, you don't have to transfer the embryo if you don't want to. But, you know, that took a matter of about 10 seconds to say, no, we still want to. You know, we want more kids. Every kid's a blessing. So we went from 1 to 3 real fast.
So, Jess, you could hear the happiness in their voices.
Oh, and the emotion. I mean, that's an incredible story. And when I read it, Buster, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And you hear about, you know, especially those couples that have been struggling. It always is the moment when you've, you know, given up. And, you know, I've had families that ended up adopting. And then the moment the adoption papers go through, they get pregnant. One of my cousins that happened to. And so in this case, I mean, I can't express to you enough too, as a mother and a, you know, when you're struggling to have children, just the frustration. And Chelsea, I feel like that really came through in your piece of just how hard that was for both of them. And you hear it in the emotion, obviously more happiness with your interview. But it is, it's a ton. And so to see it, and then it comes out double where the surrogacy happens. She's also pregnant. And I think the words they describe twins with a twist, which is pretty incredible.
It really was. And so happy for them. And, you know, I saw on social media last night after I posted this story, I was seeing notes like from a Mets fan or Nats fans. Okay. You know what? I can't not like Freddie Freeman. I mean, everybody likes Freddie Freeman in baseball, and even more so, so many people happy for him last night. On the other hand, not a lot of people around baseball liking Kevin Mather, who resigned as CEO of the Seattle Mariners. Tim and I talked about this in the podcast yesterday, Jess. After seeing those comments, especially those unbelievably tone-deaf comments about Asashi Iwakuma, and what he was implying in those comments, I didn't think he would last the day Monday in their front office, and he didn't.
Oh, and knowing too, you know, even there was, you know, the sexual harassment allegations from a few years back, and, you know, we're going to do things better and we're going to make sure we treat our employees right. And I had so many conversations yesterday about this in how many rooms are these conversations actually happening? And the fact that you get to where you're talking with so many people to the point where you can be in a rotary interview and say those things out loud without thinking that it would come across bad. And it was one after the other, which, you know, it just tells me that like the conversations were being had, you know, multiple times, and there was never someone saying, hey, you know what, this isn't okay to say, this isn't okay to talk about, this isn't okay. That hadn't happened. I think that's what blew me away. And the fact that I think there's more conversations that happen than we think. And unfortunately it takes the point where you're doing a public interview for a lot of these people to come out and say the things they're saying behind closed doors.
I got to say, as I watched that interview, I was just shaking my head because I felt like that Kevin Mather in that conversation was like the embodiment of white male privilege. And everything that he was saying.
Yeah, I think with that word, especially getting thrown out so much more, you know, last year, and just I think the consciousness of like how we talk about people with color, any person, and you know, talking about translators, the lack of speaking English is a way to describe a character of a person. You know, just all of those things. And honestly, even, you know, the prospects and, you know, or even Kyle Seager and being overpaid. I mean, there was just so, it was like, boom, boom, boom. Like it just, yeah. it kept coming. And that to me was just like these conversations though, Buster, and you know, this, they happen. And this is sometimes how players are looked at or described. And in some ways it's a good thing that it comes out in public because this isn't okay if you're running a team. I mean, how do you think those players feel when they hear that about themselves and they never knew it? I mean, yeah, you peek behind the curtain, and I think the regret sometimes is more of I shouldn't have said it in public, you shouldn't say it or feel it at all.
Right.
And I think that needs to be more public. Who are those that are running teams, whether they're CEOs, president of baseball operations, team owners that have these same thoughts?
Yeah, when he said about Iwakuma that after they told him they didn't want to pay for an interpreter, that his English suddenly got a lot better, that made me sick to my stomach. When he said that, it just, you know, and I've heard similar things through the years from old coaches. I never would have imagined would have come from a CEO. But you know what? You're right. You know, those conversations have been going on a long time. Yesterday, Fernando Tatis Jr. spoke with reporters for the first time since signing that mega deal with the San Diego Padres. And coincidentally, Francisco Lindor was introduced in Mets camp. Lindor, you know, said all the right things about Tatis's extension, talked about how happy he was for him, said that he texted him after he got the deal. And I was kind of debating in my mind yesterday, does the Tatis Jr. make it more difficult or easier for the Mets to get a deal with Lindor? You know, potentially you could look at it and say, well, it puts some financial parameters on where the Mets are probably going to need to go. And on the other hand, it's such an incredible deal, the third biggest deal in baseball history, that it might raise some expectations for Lindor. So where do you fall on that question?
I mean, I think it's harder. I mean, in my opinion, just because that deal was so long for so much, and you know, it's a, you know, obviously you have the age difference, and you know, the fact is Lindor is 27 years compared to Tatis in 22 years. But if you're looking at just like length, the amount of money, like I just feel like, not that the Mets wouldn't want to extend Lindor, but you talk about now the bar.
Yeah.
And what agents have. I mean, agents are now just drooling saying, hey, you know what, if you're saying this is someone you want to make the new face of your franchise, which I imagine if Mets want to extend, that's exactly who they're pointing to, exactly who they want to build the team around, is they, you know, hopefully get better over these next few years, and it's Lindor. Well, now you have an agent that's slapping down numbers that we haven't seen because of the deal, the few deals that we've seen the last few years. It keeps, one keeps coming every year after the other, but now Fernando Tatis Jr. has set that bar so high.
So Tatis Jr. is now in the discussion for being the best player in baseball. The guy who's been the best player in baseball is Mike Trout. I was on their Zoom call yesterday, Jess. I love this. Mike Trout, you get an understanding of why he's as great as he is. He talked about how his defense last year was terrible, and I asked him what specifically about his defense didn't he like. Give a listen.
Yeah, I think just going back to the fundamentals, I got away from it last year. You know, I think, you know, with everything going on, I think wasn't really staying on top of it, and at the end of the year, it showed. So just going back to the drills I used to do, coming in the ball, getting better jumps, working on it in, you know, BP, and just stuff I got away from last year. And, you know, it's, if you don't work on it, it'll show. And obviously, at the end of last year, I started seeing the numbers, and I knew that, you know, going into this offseason, I had to improve. And, you know, we got a great group of outfield guys here. New coach is coming in, and I think that's, you know, I basically told him, I said, look, I'm trying to be the best outfielder, trying to win a gold glove, and, you know, that's the goal.
This is a great player taking ownership, Jess.
I want to take that sound and play it to every young kid. And any parent out there can, like, I mean, I feel like that is the biggest lesson, especially when you take who is, I believe, still the greatest player in Major League Baseball. Tatis Jr. is on his heels, but you take someone who there isn't anyone better, and he's telling you why it's his fault that he's not better than he is, that he's taking accountability. And it just, you don't hear that as much anymore. And I feel like as far as just like, and anyone can learn from that, but as far as just a child, a kid hearing that, and saying it's not the umpire's fault, it's not COVID's fault, it's not the coach, it's not the weather, it's, you know, you hear so much of that, because there are a million reasons, especially now, of why you can't perform, instead of the mirror and looking yourself in that mirror and saying, what can I do better? And so to hear Mike Trout, especially in a year like last year, where, I mean, Buster, you've covered the sport so long. If there was ever a year you could make an excuse, it was last year. And Trout ain't going to give any excuses. And it's all about him being accountable and trying to get better.
I knew you would love that clip. I was excited to play that for you. All right, Jess, always great to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Buster.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Wow. Sarah, how about that? Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. I said on the podcast yesterday, Taylor hasn't told me about these new drops he's playing for you guys. What'd you think?
Oh my gosh, did you see my face? I love that we're doing this on Zoom. I was so surprised. I love it. Thank you, Taylor. That's very dramatic, very fun.
That's we got to give credit to our guy, Tim Thomas, our imaging dude. He's a master, and it's always kind of a question, like, what do you want in these drops? I don't normally ask people, but I ask Sarah because she's such a valuable contributor to the show. And she's like, I like classic rock. Can we throw a classic rock bet in? And you asked, and we delivered over here. So
yeah,
I'm glad you dig it.
Well, I'm excited. I'll be hearing that a couple times a week this year. I appreciate you joining us again, Sarah.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It's so exciting to be back to, every day having this podcast pop up on my phone and obviously getting to chat with you as well.
All right. So we're going to be talking with Steve Gelbs in just a second. And one of the questions I'm going to ask him is, as we start a National League East preview, how much is Francisco Lindor going to help the Mets defense in your eyes? Because you watch the Mets, having grown up as a Mets fan, you probably watch the Mets more than any other team, and you've seen their issues at shortstop in recent years. How much is Lindor going to help that pitching staff?
I can't even begin to quantify it. I actually helped my colleague at MLB.com, Natalie Alonso, with a story, I want to say last week, where she wanted to write about just how much she was going to help. And I went back and looked at the defensive run save for the Mets since Jose Reyes left the first time after the 2011 season. And the Mets had -101 defensive run saved at shortstop from 2011 through 2020. It was last in the majors by a pretty large margin. And Reyes was not like a great defensive shortstop, but he was far closer to the average than the various shortstops who have come and gone for the Mets in that span. And I think it's just, we haven't seen the Mets have really solid infield defense like that, especially more across the board, in a really long time. And to your point, I love the way you worded the question, because it's going to help the pitcher so much. And I think that when you look at the Mets rotation and what it looked like last year, obviously they had a huge depth issue. Jacob deGrom is the best pitcher on the planet, but there were a lot of issues beyond that. This is another, getting Marcus Stroman back, getting Syndergaard back at midseason is going to help, but so is having great defense behind them. And I think that that's another part of this.
Let's play the numbers game.
Yeah.
Number three. Oh,
sorry, I forgot about the numbers. It's been so long since we did that. So many sound effects. I'm so sorry. But here we go. So first number is 100.7, the third number, excuse me. That's how much WAR Albert Pujols has accumulated in his career. So, there was some discussion last night. He might be retiring. He might not be. I think it may have been a communication issue, maybe just something with the fact that he's entering the final year of his contract. But regardless, I don't think we appreciate him enough these days because of how the last few years have looked for him. So absolutely going to take a moment to appreciate him. So his 100.7 career WAR on Baseball Reference ranks 20th all time among position players. I mean, when you go to one of these sites and you're scrolling through all time leaders and someone is in bold, that means that's an active player. And when you see his name, I mean, it's just such a great reminder of everything that he has done in his career. And of course, a lot of this was accumulated in the first portion of his career. And to that point, he had 81.4 wins above replacement through his first 10 seasons. That was through 2010. That's second most among all position players behind only Ted Williams. I mean, I think we forget just how great of a Hall of Famer is walking among us on the field, for the Angels these days.
Number two.
Number two is 85.3. So, you mentioned the Mets earlier, so I figured we could get a little bit more into the Mets. So those are their playoff odds according to FanGraphs right now. And I have to say that despite adding Lindor and, Marcus Stroman coming back and Syndergaard coming back eventually, Carlos Carrasco, everything else, I'm not sure that I have as much faith in their pitching as the projections do. But I do think it's worth noting that the projections are really high, specifically on their pitching. And that seems to be what's really vaulting them ahead. 85.3 is giving them the best chance to make the playoffs in the division. They're projected to win it. They're projected to allow 4.2 runs per game. That's second fewest in the majors behind the Padres, which I thought was really interesting. I mean, we know what the Dodgers are doing, and the Dodgers are right there. It's Padres, Mets, Dodgers, which I think is exactly what we'd expect, but I'm not sure that I would expect them in that order. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Number one.
So number one is going to go to Christian Yelich. And the number is going to be 99. And that's for the 99th percentile exit velocity he had. I have spent a lot of the offseason staring at his baseball reference page, baseball savant page, and really trying to figure out what went wrong for him in 2020. Because percentiles, bigger number is good. 99th percentile exit velocity, he was among the best in terms of crushing the ball last year. But we saw the season he had. He really wasn't that great. And so it's very interesting for me just trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen for him in 2021. And the biggest thing that stands out in terms of his approach is that he had the largest drop in swing rate of any player who was qualified in both 2020 and 2019. So if anything, I think he needs to swing more. And it's funny because we don't say that much in this day's game, right? We're, if anything, looking at guys who are swinging too much. But for Christian Yelich, he had a big drop off in just how much he was swinging. And I don't know if it was discomfort, lingering injury, whatever else. But if he swings more, he's going to be crushing the ball just as frequently as we saw him do in 2018 and 2019.
Yeah, Sarah, you know, it's interesting. You're talking with Brewers people, and Yelich isn't going to come out and make excuses. But I heard a lot from those folks about how, you know, some, as you know, a lot of baseball players are creatures of habit. And last year, a lot of habits had to change because of the COVID protocol. And Yelich's process, it wasn't the same. And I mentioned to you, I think last summer, in watching him hit, he just looked confused all the time to me. Like, he would take a called third strike, and he just would be going back to dugout like, what am I thinking? And I saw that look in his face so often. And just real quick, to follow up on what your point about the Mets, I'm going to say this to Steve Gelbs too. I look at the Mets and the Padres. Yeah, this is the team they have on February 23rd. But the front offices, the owners are so motivated that I assume they're going to be upgrades during the year.
Definitely. And, you know, I think that just seeing what happened in the offseason, I mean, those were the main teams to make some moves. We saw the Blue Jays make, I guess, a decent number of moves as well. But definitely it feels like those two teams and those front offices are coming out with a lot to prove. You know, the Mets are always, whether it's the Yankees, the Braves having won the last three division titles, whatever it is, you know that Steve Cohen is trying to make an impact here. And with the Padres, I mean, we heard everything Fernando Tatis Jr. said yesterday about how he wants San Diego to be a winning city. And I think that, you know, AJ Preller seemed to be completely in agreement. And I would absolutely, if they need something at the deadline, I would. I mean, they traded for like 10 major league guys at the deadline this year, and that was a 60-game season. So think of what they'll do with a little more time to evaluate guys.
Yeah, I told Tim Kirkton yesterday that Peter Seidler, the owner of the Padres, is the new Mike Ilitch, where forget all the, you know, the expectations of a small market, mid-market team. He's going to do what he can to win, and I don't think he's worried about his budget. Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Steve Gelb reports on the Mets for SNY. And every time there's a press conference or post-game interview, Steve, that means you get the first question each time. Yeah, that's what happened yesterday with the Francisco Lindor press conference. And I got to say, having been in your shoes doing post-game interviews, there's a little pressure in that.
There is a little pressure. I think, you know, I'm going into year, I want to say this is year 7 or year 8 for me already, so, which is crazy. But you kind of get used to it and you understand it. But you know better than anyone, you've been doing this for so long, that there's kind of a rhythm to these press conferences. And so sometimes there's a question that you really want to ask, but it doesn't really fit as the leadoff question. So you either have to come back in at the end, or somebody else asks it. So You know, it's one of those things that you kind of get a feel for. I will say this, though. When the team is really bad, and we've certainly had some seasons where in the second half of the season it falls off, you realize that it's also your job not just to ask the first couple of questions, but to keep that press conference going when a lot of the writers, you know, really just want to write about the game and get out of there as soon as possible. So I do remember my first lesson in 2017 after, 2015 and 2016, where they both made the playoffs. In 2017, sometime around mid-August, I realized I'd ask a couple of questions and then that would be it. And you needed to come out with maybe six or seven so that your post-game show had something to talk about, because nobody else really wanted to do it at that point.
Well, and having served in both roles, you know, having been a writer for a long time, I got to say, too, as you were just saying, when a team goes through a losing streak, game six, game seven, game 10, when I covered the Padres, game 13, man, it is tough to be the leadoff hitter in those post-game press conferences. And writers like me, you know, at some point you get a little bit gutless and you hide behind the TV people like yourself. So you're right. But those are the worst during the losing streak.
Those are the worst. Hopefully the way this team is set up this year, I won't need to worry about that as much.
Exactly. And you are starting off our National League East preview. First off, I've been fascinated by this, you know, living in the New York area, having covered the Mets at one point for the New York Times. I have so many friends who are Mets fans, and I've just been surprised by the response of a lot of Mets fans to the team's offseason, where even on social media this morning on Twitter, I answered back to a Mets fan who was complaining about what they'd done, and I ran through it. You get Francisco Lindor, all-star shortstop. You get Carlos Carrasco, who's a number two or three starter on a good team. Trevor May, one of the best relievers in baseball. James McCann, one of the top 10 catchers. And you get a ton of depth. Like, this team is clearly better, and I've heard that from executives with other teams.
Clearly better. Clearly one of the top five teams in the National League. I've been stunned by it. I think we all have. We understand that the expectations shot through the roof this offseason when Steve Cohen bought the team and, became by far the richest owner in the sport and made clear that he was going to spend, not like a drunken sailor, but he was going to spend to make this team a contender. And I think what happened, you know, looking back at it, is there were such clear needs for this team and needs that could be filled by the top free agents on the market that there was almost this assumption from Mets fans and quite frankly, from some in the media, yep, myself included, maybe not an assumption, but a thought that, you know, they were going to go out and sign George Springer. They were going to go out and maybe sign Real Muto or Bauer. And, you know, they certainly made a strong play for Bauer. But the fact of the matter is, just because they ended up with zero of those three players, those top free agents, it doesn't mean they did nothing. And there seems to be this almost lack of understanding about what they did and the fact that they acquired Francisco Lindor, who of those, you know, if you group the four of them together, those three agents and Lindor, he's the best player there. So, they upgraded significantly at shortstop. They have an incredible amount of rotation depth now. You know, that rotation was a disaster last year, and this rotation is now one of the top rotations in baseball, and they're going to get Noah Syndergaard back, you know, knock on wood, in June. McCann significantly upgrades them at catcher, and you just, you know, you started to see, instead of focusing on all that they did to, you know, greatly improve this team, this focus on, well, you know, defensively, is J.D. Davis good enough at third base? And is Dom Smith good enough in left field? And Brandon Nimmo good enough in center? No team is perfect, and you can't do everything. But given, especially those players that I named, you know, maybe they're defensively a little out of position at times, but offensively what they bring and the fact that, they did so many other things to upgrade in so many areas, this team is a contender, and that should be the focus, not on the fact that they didn't sign every single free agent that was available or could have been a fit.
And I want to compare reporter notes with you on this, because although there is a lot of criticism from some Mets fans about them not signing free agents, Steve, I don't know if those were necessarily available to them. I'll run through, and I'm going to throw DJ LeMahieu into the mix as well, along with the three that you talked about. You know, they thought they had a deal with Bauer, but they were competing with the Dodgers, and Trevor Bauer chose to stay in his home state of California. You know, when last year when there was bidding for Gerrit Cole between the Dodgers and the Yankees, at the end of it, the Dodgers were like, you know what? In the end, he wanted to play with the Yankees, and we can't do anything about that. I kind of wonder if that was what was going on with Trevor Bauer. If the Dodgers got close, he might have wanted to go with them. JT Realmuto, there was a perception among other teams, other than the Mets, that he didn't want to play in New York for family considerations. And, you know, only JT knows that for sure. But that was there. The same thing with George Springer, by the way. There was a perception among some teams that he didn't really want to play in New York, that he preferred to play someplace where maybe there wasn't as much media scrutiny. Again, George is the only one who can answer that, and he might not answer it with complete transparency. And you know this, is DJ LeMahieu was a free agent. While the Mets were constantly tied to him through media reports, there was a wide perception among other teams that, you know what, in the end, he wanted to play for the Yankees.
Buster, it's a two-way street, and I think that's what people forget sometimes. It's not just who the team wants, it's who the player wants, and if there's a deal to be made. You know, I think when it comes to Realmuto specifically, certainly we all heard those reports and the perception that he didn't want to play in New York. But I also think, you know, there was a perception, and probably rightly so, from the front office that, hey, we can go after JT here, but, you know, this process may drag out for a while as he seeks to get paid what he thinks he's worth. And in our minds, we've got an opportunity right now to, you know, get a really valuable catcher in our minds in McCann, who, you know, maybe isn't quite what Realmuto is, but maybe his, you know, the bang for your buck could be a little bit better. And certainly the upside is there for him as well. So I think in that regard, they decided, you know, let's lock this in early in the offseason and move forward with a catcher we feel really good about. And then with the other two, the Mets made their pushes, but you're right. It seems like Bauer's preference was to go home. And with Springer, I can't talk to his preference, but, you know, I also know the Mets have their limits, and you can have as much money as you want, but you should have a limit on what you're willing to pay certain players, especially when there are guys that are going to have to get paid to retain them very soon. You know, you can only go so much with Springer and a Conforto and a Lindor and, you know, who knows, Syndergaard after this season. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into play here. And again, back to the original point, yeah, the Mets may have gone 0 for 3 on those free agents, but the overall picture here is extremely positive, not just for right now, but for the future of this franchise.
You watch this team play every day. How much does Francisco Lindor help their defense, help their pitching?
I think it's immeasurable, quite frankly. You know, listen, the Mets, I will say this defensively, you know, what Jimenez brought in that short sample size last season, that opened some eyes as well. And I think that, you know, he is going to be a, you know, premium defender at short for a long time. But Francisco Lindor is one of these guys that, you know, just elevates everything, elevates everything on the field. Defensively, I think he'll really help J.D. Davis at third base as well. You know, his range is going to allow J.D. Davis to, you know, not have to cover as much ground. And certainly when you look at this pitching staff, specifically with a guy like Marcus Stroman, who likes to keep the ball on the ground, you need really good infield defense. And Lindor, you know, he just covers so much ground. Like I said, he makes everybody around him better in that regard. I think it's going to be a big deal to have him defensively. You know, certainly the offense he brings is something else, but this is a very good offensive team already. Defensively, he can really make a noticeable impact immediately for this group.
Real quick, 30 seconds. Where's Syndergaard stand? Noah Syndergaard, as he comes back from Tommy John surgery.
You know, by all accounts, looks great, feels great. You know, he was just transferred to the 60-day DL, so, or IL. I don't think I'll ever get used to saying that. But He's on track for a June return. That's what it sounds like. And certainly with the transfer of him to the 60 day, you know that he's not coming back any sooner, but by all accounts, everything is on track for him to return, before the All-Star break.
And last one for you. I think we have to remember this about not only the Mets, but also the Padres. These front offices, these owners are incredibly motivated. And if, in fact, it's just a 10-team playoff field, what I've heard from other teams is, you know what, it's going to turn into an absolute buyer's market with a lot of sellers in a year in which payrolls have come back. And so the team that the Mets have here on February 23rd is not going to be the team they're going to have it on August 1st as they go through the trade deadline. I don't think there's any question that if the Mets need help, they're going to go out and get it.
It's going to be an arms race, and I agree with you, Buster, and I agree with what everybody's saying. And yeah, I think the Mets are going to put themselves in a position to be right there, and they will do whatever it takes if they are right there to push themselves over the top.
All right, sir. Well, I appreciate it, Steve. Always enjoy talking to you.
Great stuff, Buster. Appreciate it as always.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First up, we've got Andrew Campbell at Real Camp Drew. He writes in, "Hey, Buster, how do incentives attached to contracts affect teams' competitive balance tax at the end of the season? For instance, if Brett Gardner gets an extra $1 million by having 500 plate appearances, could that $1 million put the Yankees over the threshold?"
Andrew, great question. Yes, it could theoretically. That accounting is actually done when they talk about luxury tax and the competitive balance tax. That all is done in the month of December. And at that point, the final numbers are put out there and the assessments, the taxes are put on teams. So yeah, in theory, that could happen. But I'm sure that Brian Cashman, as he was planning for 2021, he probably accounted for that in the numbers that he negotiated with Brett Gardner's agent.
Last one for today. Our pal Amy Chapman at Amy R. Chapman writes in, "Question rant. Amy. With the service time admission by the Mariners president, teams laying off staff, yet spending money on real estate deals near stadiums, etc., why should players trust management in the upcoming CBA without seeing the books?"
Maybe they don't trust them. There is no trust between the two sides right now, which is why they don't really talk that much. And there's not really any haggling and there's not a lot of negotiating going on. And it's why people around the sport privately are really concerned about what's going to happen when the current collective bargaining agreement expires. If I could design the world, they'd be in a room right now and saying, "Hey, let's work through the service time manipulation. Let's work through the tanking issue." Shoot, I've been writing about that for 5 years, but they're not really talking about it. The teams are doing what they do and the players are mad.
Simple as that. All right. Thanks for writing in, everyone. # Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And NL East week marches on tomorrow. We'll be talking Phillies. Very exciting.
Yeah, Tom McCarthy's going to join us, play-by-play man for the Philadelphia Phillies. That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Jess, Steve, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.